And now, a bit of romance.
Two girls on a quest to find which rom-com is the best. P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
Hello, and welcome to P.S. I Love Rom-Coms, a podcast about men who know their muslin, open carriages to bustle in, and romances to get lost in. We're your hosts. I'm Mia.
And I'm Allie. P.S. I Love Rom-Coms is a rom-com review podcast where each week, Mia and I ask the question, which rom-com is the best rom-com of all time?
For the month of August, we've decided to celebrate one of rom-com's founding mothers, Jane Austen, in P.S. I Love Rom-Coms, Austen August. Over the next couple of weeks, we plan on watching a movie adaptation from every one of Jane's six novels. So grab your bonnets and hop in your carriages because we're about to be lost in some Austen, baby. Woo!
Joining us today to celebrate Jane is Janeite and author of the popular Jane Austen blog, Jane Austen Runs My Life. And if she was in a Jane Austen novel, she'd be Catherine Morland because she is incredibly well-read, especially in Austen. So you guys, it's the one and only Leah Mattson!
Thank you so much for having me be a part. I'm so excited.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh my gosh, we're so excited to have such an expert on for Austen August. We cannot tell you how thrilled this makes us.
Yeah, and listeners, if you love Jane Austen and you're loving Austen August, you have to check out Leah's blog, Jane Austen Runs My Life. It's so fun. And you did this really, I think it's a series where you like watch like Jane Austen movies with your niece, and like she has this very fun kind of like commentary. And I just want to say thank you for the blog, and thank you for introducing your niece to Jane Austen. So yeah, I wish I had been introduced to Jane earlier as well. It's very fun.
Yeah, that started my niece does not like to watch my movies. She is 13. She's going to be 14 this year, and she used to, but more recently, she's kind of like, you're old. Everything you like is old. That's kind of like her mentality. So I made her promise she had to watch one thing I picked when she would come to visit in the summer. So last year, I tried to get her to watch both. She would only watch one. We watched Sense and Sensibility, the 1995 version. And she had a whole lot more comments with that one because it is so much more comedic. And then this year, I told her we're going to watch Northanger Abbey because I had so much fun just writing down, and we were comparing like to different things. So then we watched it this year, and next year I'm trying to decide what I'm going to make her watch with me.
Ooh. I mean, we'll disagree on what you should do, me and Allie.
I know. I would say have her watch the 2005 Joe Wright Pride and Prejudice, just because it's very like visual, and I feel like maybe like easier to like get into if like the language of Austen is a little overwhelming. It's a very pretty movie. But Mia, would you recommend Persuasion?
I mean, yes, but also I get it. For like a 14-year-old, I don't think I think Persuasion also like you appreciate more with age.
Yes, like, I feel like situation.
I would honestly pitch Bridget Jones's Diary. I would pitch Bridget Jones as like a modern Pride and Prejudice. That could be a fun,
that's
a fun
good,
watch.
That's a good one.
I know you guys love that movie. I actually do not like that movie. I really don't understand why people like it. Actually, I really would. I haven't watched that episode yet. I was thinking, I didn't get time to. I was like, I want it. I just feel like she's not very witty. She kind of just lets things happen to her. She never really does much about it. And she's not, I don't know, she's not very how I would imagine the character of Elizabeth to be. I think, too, I saw a lot of trailers before I watched it where they really promote it as she's like really powerful in how she talks, how she's going to stand up to anybody who treats her bad. But then the things happen and she doesn't say anything, like when the men grope her and stuff, and she doesn't really do anything or mention anything. I think part of it was I had a different view of what I thought it would be like. And I don't really, her friends, I feel like it's not very, as much as what I thought it would be like with Jane Austen. Like I didn't hate it. I really just don't get it, kind of, if that makes sense.
No, you make a really fair point that Bridget Jones is really nothing like Elizabeth Bennet. I definitely feel like, when I think about those two heroines, I think Elizabeth Bennet is like the heroine that I aspire to be like. I aspire to be witty and charming and just have the most, you know, wonderful open manner. But I feel like the heroine I actually am is Bridget Jones, where it's like, I just cannot get my life together. And I'm trying, and I'm really trying, but then I'm giving up. And then I just like, there are some weeks where I just need to give up. But yeah, that is interesting. I think Bridget Jones is a good movie on its own, but besides, you know, the kind of plot device of, you know, the Colin Firth character of Darcy and like the Hugh Grant kind of charming Wickham. That's really the only like big parallel there is, I feel like, between those two movies.
Yeah. And that's why you watch the stories, think. Yeah. For the lovely.
That is triangle.
Exactly.
Jane Austen is a queen of love triangles. And also like, I would say even like you get like weird love rhombuses sometimes where it's Emma, where it's kind of like, you think two people are going to get together and then they kind of like swap partners almost, where you think it's going to be, you know, Emma and Frank Churchill and Jane Fairfax and Mr. Knightley. And then it's like, JK, it's the opposite. Flap those partners. So love Jane for just the infinite, you know, romantic geometrical designs she's created. But now, Leah, we like to start off each episode with a little segment called Which Rom-Com Hero/Heroine Are You Channeling? Where we equate the experiences we've had this week with a famous rom-com hero or heroine. But for us in August, we're switching it up and we are sticking to characters that are only in Austen novels. And I can start us off this week. Oh, man. Yeah, I can. Can I? I can. This week, I think I'm channeling, and I'm so sorry. This seems like a cop-out, but no. It's true. I think I'm channeling Catherine Morland. She's a very, very relatable heroine. So relatable. I went on a date it's like a date that I was like, really looking like forward to, and it was one of those dates where like we made it like a month ago because of schedules and stuff, and so there was like a lot of anticipation building up to this date that I was gonna go on, and when there's that much space, your imagination, it gets optimistic and gets a little bit ahead of you, and you start kind of painting this future of like what this date could be and what this person could be and what your relationship could be and what the wedding's going to be like. And like your mind just like goes a million miles a minute, or at least mine does. And it's really unfair to the person that you go out with. But I did that. I kind of painted the picture of like the person I wanted to go on the date with. And then when I actually met them, you know, how could they live up to the person that I thought they would be? And it was just a real, bummer. And I felt very like Catherine Morland, foolish, where it was like, Allie, why did you do that? Why did you let your imagination go wild like that? But that's who I'm channeling. Catherine Morland, but like third act Catherine Morland, where she's like, I'm so foolish to have thought that General Tilney murdered his wife. Oh my God, so stupid. So that's who I'm channeling this week. Mia, who are you channeling?
I'll tell you, but also I'll say first, but everybody does that, especially when it's so far in advance. And like when people are just like blank canvases like that, where we don't know like what's up with them yet. I mean, Yeah, like that's the most like normal thing in the world to future trip. But yes, and then Catherine learns the hard lesson. I hope you're not burning a fun book you like right now.
Too late. There's literally a roaring fire and my phone is in it along with the Hinge app. Just kidding.
No. Hinge, we still want to.
We still love Hinge. Thank you, Hinge.
But that's amazing. I too am channeling a character from Northanger Abbey. This week I'm channeling none other but Mr. Allen. because they like get to Bath, they travel to Bath, and then they like want to go out, and he has a line or something that's just like, why would you want to go anywhere? And I was just like, Mr. Allen, same. Because I have just been like, I had just like a really crazy, like almost 2 weeks of like traveling for work and like entering and exiting different time zones and like constantly being around people. And I've just like reached my limit. And I just like, I'm like, and I got back home and then I had to like immediately like go do like two social things. And I'm just like, why would you people want to go anywhere? I'm just like so tired to the point where I'm like now just like Mr. Allen, it's like I'm in Bath, there's lots of fun things, and I just want to stay home and chill. So I just really identified with him, and that's my vibe. And I am gonna get that downtime to recover. So then I'm sure I'll be like, I'll be like, or when he gets to the party and he immediately is like, I'm going to the smoke room, I'm like, yeah, Mr. Allen, I'll see you there. We can just be quiet and like smoke on our pipes. But I'm gonna like rest and charge up, and then I can go be like Catherine Morland, like out on the town being like, what will I do with all my suitors? So that's who I'm channeling. Leah, who are you channeling this week?
Originally I thought I was more of Catherine Morland, but then when I was thinking about today, I feel like I'm a little bit more Mr. Tilney. I celebrate Friday the 13th anytime there's a Friday the 13th with horror films and pizza. So we watched a lot of vampire things, which I think sometimes, you know, we forget that Mr. Tilney was totally into all that gothic stuff too. He wasn't like maybe as outward about it as Catherine, but he totally was into all of it. But I had my other niece with me, and she really likes K-dramas, and I enjoy watching them with her. We watched one that she likes, and I was being a little bit too snarky about one of the characters. And I was like, I'm sorry. She's like, stop talking about him. I love him. And I was like, okay, I'll take it down a notch. And I was like, I was feeling very much like Mr. Tilney with that sarcasm and just making jokes about things. And sometimes some of my jokes she did not get. And I was like, oh, I'm too old. No.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, I love that.
Yes, it is like so kismet that it's Friday the 13th and this happens to be like one of Jane Austen's like spookier like character clad novels / adaptations. I also love that you celebrate Friday the 13th. That's so fun. I want to do that.
I want to do that. Yeah. I love that. Instead of it being I want pizza and watching horror movies. That sounds like perfect. Well, it's interesting. It seems like we are all channeling characters from Northanger Abbey, which what a coincidence that that's the movie that we watched this week. So this week we watched John Jones's 2007 adaptation of Northanger Abbey. This British televised film adaptation was adapted by Andrew Davies and directed by John Jones on a budget of £2 million. Very cheap. I don't know the pounds to dollars like conversion rate that well, but still pretty cheap TV movie because it was for ITV.
Wasn't it? They did all three a week apart. They aired them. It was I think it was Northanger Abbey, Mansfield Park, and Persuasion. They did them all that month. So they like filmed them right after the other. So that's probably too why they had a little bit less of a budget. They're like, we're going to knock all three of these out and just have them all air. Like, I believe it was a week apart from each other.
which honestly explains, like, they all use the exact same costumes. Like, yes. A lot of them. That's, like, the fun facts on all of them is it's, like, they all had the same outfits
that they were just recycling. It's, like, yeah. The producers were, like, okay, we're going to take the budget of one movie and we're going to spread it out for three. That's so funny. So in this adaptation of Jane Austen's beloved novel, Catherine Morland, the daughter of a rural clergyman, played by Felicity Jones, a very young Felicity Jones, is obsessed with gothic novels and has a powerful imagination. When she is taken to Bath for the season by family friends, the Allens, she meets Henry Tilney, played by J.J. Field.
Swoon city.
Yes.
So attractive.
He did, like, distractingly hot.
Upsettingly.
Yes. As soon as he enters the frame, he has all your attention. It just immediately. And there's a line. Oh my God. Every time I watch it, I laugh when he's all, oh, you're going to write in your diary that you were dancing with one and a more handsome man was looking at you from afar. Every time I watch that, it doesn't matter how many times, I'm like, what? Are you blind? You are way hotter than the other guy. Like, you're the hottest man in the room.
Yeah.
Even like, when like, said laughably it, modest, like, where it's like, yeah. Oh my gosh, you're so right. But so this meeting of Mr. Tilney, along with a mistaken report of her family's wealth, leads to Catherine being invited to Northanger Abbey by Mr. Tilney's father, General Tilney. It is there where Catherine's overactive imagination gets her in trouble with the man she loves.
And a little bit of history about the novel Northanger Abbey. Northanger Abbey is a coming-of-age novel and a satire of gothic novels. In particular, Austen is said to have targeted Anne Radcliffe, the author of gothic novels such as A Sicilian Romance from 1790, The Romance of the Forest from 1791, and The Mysteries of Udolpho from 1794. It was completed in 1803 and was the first of Austen's novels completed in full, but was published posthumously in 1817 with Persuasion. So, Leah, to start off our discussion, would you tell us a little bit about your relationship to Jane Austen and to this particular film adaptation?
So you guys might not like me after I admit how I started into Jane Austen. It was all because I really did not like the 2005 Pride and Prejudice. I know, I'm going to be like, get off this right now. We don't want to talk to you anymore.
No, I'm right there with you, Leah. This is a me and Allie debate. So now I have the upper hand again. I'm sorry, please continue.
That's okay. I've always been a big fan of classics. I really love gothic stories. I was so into Wuthering Heights and Heathcliff. And as an adult, I'm like, I should not have been reading that book as much as I did as a child. And I really love the Phantom of the Opera. I would just reread those over and over again. And my sister was also a big reader. And she was like, oh, I just read this book. I think you'll like it. It's called Pride and Prejudice. It's about, there's these five sisters and the mom's worried about them getting married. And I was like, don't even talk to me about that. That sounds like such a girly book. All they care about is getting married. I want to be more gothic mystery. So I didn't listen to her. And then I was around 16 at the time. I went to sleepover and we were trying to decide which movie to watch. I don't remember what the other movie was. But the one that won was The Pride and Prejudice, the 2005 adaptation. And I couldn't really tell what was going on. I found out later one of my ears, I lost some hearing in it when I was younger. I had a really bad ear infection. I didn't know that at the time. So when there is a big crowd of people, I have a hard time sometimes hearing everything. I watch everything with subtitles now. So I don't know if it was just because I was annoyed at some of the people at the sleepover or if it was I couldn't really hear what was happening as well. But there was like a couple of things I went into it and I was just like, I really don't like this movie. I can't tell anything that's going on. I don't know who are these people. And this one girl was like, oh, you just don't understand like British films. You just haven't watched that many. And I was like so mad when she told me that because I was a big fan of Masterpiece Theater and I used to watch. So then I got so mad. I was like, I'm going to read this book and find out what this book is about, what the story is. And someone had given me the book, like, I want to say maybe 5 years earlier. So I had the book. I just hadn't read it because I had this idea that it was just about women wanting to get married. And I was like, I'm so not into that. So I read it. Right. I loved it. I read every one of her books. And then I had to watch all the movies. My sister would make fun of me because I'd be like, let's watch another one. Here's a different adaptation. And so we would watch it. And she goes, you need to stop watching these movies. You keep talking with the British accent. You need to stop and find something else. But that's kind of how it started for me. I loved it. And I loved especially Northanger Abbey is probably my favorite of all her books. I think Catherine is just so relatable with the fact that she's not, she starts off as a tomboy, and that's kind of how I was as a kid. I was more of a tomboy. I didn't really care about, like, I wasn't as interested in my looks, like, a little bit older. I like to read a lot, which she likes to do. I had a completely overactive imagination. I sometimes still do. I'm a lot better about it. I can rein it in. But I would be like, when I was a kid, I would just go off with all these different things that I saw. Maybe this is happening and this and that. So I think she's just incredibly relatable with what the type of person she is and what she goes through. I also, I had liked the book Don Quixote and some parts of it are a little hard to get through.
Yes.
But I found out later when I took this college course on the history of the novel that there was this other writer who rewrote it, and it's the female Quixote, because I guess they don't know how to pronounce Quixote. I don't know why they called it that, or The Adventures of Arabella. And it's kind of similar where she reads these romance novels and she gets into all this trouble. So then when I was reading, after I read that, I was like, oh, this is a lot like Northanger Abbey, which I really loved. So that book was fun, but I think Northanger Abbey's better because it has Catherine, it has Henry Tilney, which is one of the best Jane Austen heroes. And I just love the whole spooky vibe.
Oh my God, agreed.
The Northanger Abbey, and she's like, I don't know what happened. And it feels so much like, you know, a mix of all these other like gothic stories, like Edgar Allan Poe and things like that, where you're like, oh, something happened in this house. There's an evil sense about it. Or Rebecca, where you're like, oh, something happened in this house. But I really love this adaptation. I feel like the actors were perfect. This is one of my favorites, and I can watch it anytime because I feel like the actors and the actresses just completely understood who their characters were and like where they're coming from. I'm sorry, that was really long.
So right. I mean, the acting in this was grade A. And also what's so cool about this is like two of the lead actresses, Felicity Jones and Carey Mulligan, went on to be like big A-list celebrities. And here they are like, you know, back in the like early aughts doing these kind of British TV movies. And it's just really cool to see them like where they got their start.
Yeah. And I so agree. Like every time I approach a new adaptation, I'm always like so nervous. I won't be able to like get into the rhythm of it. And this one, I was just in so quickly. And I do think it was the performances, and even like with Carey Mulligan, I also like so appreciated that with Isabella and what's their brother's name? It's not James, is it? James Thorpe?
John. Catherine's brother's James.
That's right. Okay, yes. So with Isabella and John Thorpe, like just in their performances, how you're like just get a second of it where you're like, oh, these are mean people. And then all of a sudden they're being really nice. And then you're like, wait, did I imagine that? And then you're like, no, they are really mean. So yeah, I feel like they just like understood the characters so well. And it made it so easy to like relate to. Even after, like, again, like, I mean, all of these books are so, so relatable still to this day. But Allie, had you seen this one before, or what's your relationship with Northanger Abbey like?
Yeah, so I have seen this adaptation before. This was like during my kind of big like rom-com phase in college where I was just watching a lot of rom-coms. I watched this one, and I hadn't read the book before I had seen it. And I was in love with it. It's really interesting. Like when I think about like Catherine Morland, she kind of like as a character seems like the most kind of like traditional, like rom-com heroine that we've experienced. Like she's very like young and she's just like learning about the world. And so that was, I think it was easy for me to just like watch without reading the book first because of like the way there's like a lot of like traditional rom-com elements in this movie. But yes, this is also one of the books that I don't know as well. I read it also in college, but it was like kind of, I was also, you know, partying and going to class, so I wasn't like wasn't a deep read. But yes, I do love this story, and I love Mr. Tilney, and am excited to talk about him later on. But Mia, what about you? Have you seen this adaptation before?
No, I'm like sort of like the biggest noob out of everyone we have on. And Allie, I've read like Pride and Prejudice, Sense and Sensibility, and Emma, but I've not read any of Jane's other novels. So this was my first time doing Northanger Abbey, and I was shocked at how obsessed with this I was. Like, I could not handle the drama. Like, I was like, and I love genre bending so much, and specifically, I love when you can mix like horror comedy or horror and rom-com. So yeah. Similarly, once I was like, whoa, this is like gothic and it's romance. And it's like, also, I'm so curious to know if the book is as sort of like sexy as this adaptation. Like, I was also like, wow, okay, that's like something I haven't like seen in a lot of Jane Austen's other novels or adaptations. So I was like blown away by it. As always with Jane Austen, I'm completely blown away with how relatable the characters and their circumstances are modern life. So just the situation of being presented with like two suitors who both like seem great, but one you connect with more, but the other one is sort of like strong-arming you and like manipulating you. And I'm just like, wow, I cannot believe humans just continue to act so similarly. And that she captured it so well. And this was her first completed novel, so also just like what a genius. But yeah, so I loved it. I was obsessed with it. I was literally like, at one point, just with my personality, the idea that you make plans with somebody and then somebody else convinces you to not do those plans and then you run into them, like that is my psychological like worst social nightmare in the world. And I was just dying. I was like, oh my god, like how could Jane Austen understand me so deeply? I just relate to Catherine so much, because also just like, I mean, I love when Eleanor says to her like, you've had a dangerous upbringing because you've assumed other people are as like good-hearted as yourself. Mm-hmm. And I just, I just like relate so much to being like sort of like naive in the big world, like being like, oh shoot, like kind of being late to the party, like how humans can be. And I just think it's so relatable and wonderful. And obviously, I feel like I cannot say his name correctly. Mr. Tinley?
Tilney.
Yeah, obviously Mr. Tilney is like the hottest hero I've encountered. I mean, wow. I mean, I guess I still Colin Firth, you know, but wow. Wow, Mr. Tilney.
Yeah, I think we should just start off by talking about Mr. Tilney, and he's in the air. We should talk about him. Leah, do you maybe want to start off by saying, what do you think it is about Mr. Tilney that makes him so gosh darn charming and lovable and handsome and incredible?
I think the best thing about Mr. Tilney is he's so open. With all the other men that she wrote, they kind of follow more society's rules. And then with Captain Wentworth, of course, you know, he's got his own baggage he has to deal with. But with Mr. Tilney, like, he's not supposed to talk to them because he doesn't know them. And he's just like, whatever. And I love how he just jokes and he's just so funny and just so open with her. And even like when he, because he's funny and he's silly and sarcastic, but even though he makes jokes, he never makes them at the expense of other people to make them feel bad. It's more like he's making the joke to make them laugh. Like when Mrs. Allen, when she's talking about her muslin, and he treats it as a completely serious subject when obviously that's something men would not talk about. But he listens to what she has to say. He compliments her on what she has. He does this joke with Catherine about how it'll fray and you'll have to make something else out of your dress because the muslin wasn't as good. But he's just so open and so charming and so fun, but it's all real charm. It's not that he's charming to kind of hide something. He's charming to make it like they're going to have a good time. He wants to set them at ease. He gets that table for them because they need one. He's kind of like this knight in shining armor, this romantic hero, but at the same time, he's just fun and open and just, he's not like, I feel like today we have so many where it's the guy is this like, broody guy, which, I mean, I feel like a lot of women like, but he's just, he likes to make these jokes. I love when they're talking, when they're dancing. That's one of my favorite parts. And she's like, we already talked. He's like, oh, you can't tell anybody. Because then we'll never be able to be in polite society. And she just kind of looks at him, or when he talks about the diary, you write in your diary. And she goes, how do you know I have a diary? And I like, too, their relationship, how quickly he's able to set her at ease and she can be like her real person. She's not so, because, you know, she comes to this new place and I feel like she's really kind of anxious and excited. But at the same time, she's kind of like, I'm not sure. While when she's with him, she's able just to be herself, and then she can joke with him. And that's a really different relationship than you see in any of her other books. You really don't see that kind of fun, that joking around. Just like, it's not exactly a friendship because they don't know each other that long, but it's like a basics. They're building a friendship in a sense. They're building that friendship, which I feel like is even more romantic, that they're having fun together. They're able to talk to each other just as, you know, as if they've known each other for a really long time. And I feel like that's something that you want in a person. Like when you see that, you're like, oh, I want that. I want a guy who's like that. I like that he knew the muslin and he complimented her and he can tell those jokes. He can just be real and be himself. He doesn't feel like he has to pretend to be somebody else.
Yes, you're so right. He like, he doesn't have the baggage. I think you said that really well with Captain Wentworth. Like, he doesn't seem to have the baggage that a lot of these other, like Austin, like love interests have. And something that's really cool too, because there is like an age difference and he is like more worldly than Catherine is, but like he never forces his opinions on her. He does this really cool thing throughout that I think is like, honestly, probably the sexiest thing a man can do, which is ask you your opinion on things, which is like, he like tease a lot and stuff. But when like Catherine asked his opinion on like John Thorpe, he instead was like, I'm really, you know, you're going to ask my opinion on John Thorpe. Like, there's no way that I'm going to give an unbiased answer. And then he kind of forces her to just kind of like figure stuff out on her own by like asking her questions that kind of like lead her to things. Like he had this like moment where he teased, they're like walking through the forest and he makes this joke where he's like, oh, you know, like a novel's better than like 10, you know, sermons or whatever, like 10 boring sermons. Or, and then she's like, are you, you're joking, right? You're like, you're poking fun at novels. And he's like, do you think I'm joking? And then she has to kind of think for herself about critically about novels and the pros and cons to reading novels and like the, you know, the, you know, what about novels have worth and like that they like talk about and what about novels are kind of like silly. And it's just very cool the way he doesn't like force his opinions, because he could just be like, you like novels, you should like sermons. But he instead like asks her a question that leads her to find out what her own opinion is, versus John Thorpe actively doesn't listen to her when she screams at him, stop this carriage right now. That's my, Mr. Tilney's just so good at listening. And that's honestly so hot.
John Thorpe, when they talk about the books, and I love one of the scenes where you brought up the forest, it made me think about it, when she talks about how, oh, these trees and the plants, they remind me of like how France would be. They're like, oh, have you been there? She goes, no, I just read about it. And they never make her feel bad for wanting to read about it or reading the novels, Anne Radcliffe's novels. But as soon as she talks to the Thorpes about it, he's all like, ugh, novels, those are so dumb. And then he's like, you should read this book instead. Yeah. Like immediately invalidating her opinion and her thoughts and what she thinks about it and making her feel dumb because he goes to Oxford and he knows what's what. And she's this girl from a little town, and she's know what she's talking about. So I really love when you see his interactions like that. And he's like, oh, yeah, I like to read those. I've read those books. I like to read those. Or even just, you know, he's like, oh, yeah, I guess it is kind of like that. He never tries to make her feel bad or dumb or uneducated or anything like that.
Yes, totally. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. And the moment for me that just completely sold me on Mr. Tilney is, of course, when Mrs. Allen and Catherine are just like at the party, and they're, and again, like I just cannot believe that Jane Austen from like hundreds of years ago can capture this feeling like so precisely. But it's like they're effectively at a ball, at a party where they don't know anybody, mm-hmm. and everyone's being like pretty rude to them. And they're like, and it's like, you can just tell like Catherine's anxiety is just like building so much. And then Mr. Tilney accidentally bumps into Mr. Allen. And it's like, as soon as he sees their predicament, he is like, oh my God, let me like help you guys. Let me like find you a seat. I'll find someone to properly introduce us. And now you know somebody and I will dance with you. And I feel like he does it before. Like I was like not even positive he would be the romantic interest. I was thinking he could be like, you know, like a Mr. Bennick or just like, you know, like one of those like classic travel friend characters who's just like sort of kind. And then he sort of like falls for her. And I'm just like, wow, what like an emotionally aware, like and socially aware human. And then it's that kind of thing where as soon as he like accepts them, everyone else is like, oh, okay, we're allowed to talk to them now. Like now we're interested. And I just love that type of character who goes against the grain and doesn't care and is like kind. And wow, I just cannot believe Austin gave us this gift from so long ago.
I love that scene when she's asking about the money, when he's talking about how like his dad wants them to marry people who are rich. And she's asking him, do you think you're going to do that? Because she's like, I'm not rich and I really like him. And he tells her, I don't know. I think that's going to be a test of my character. You know, I've always hoped I wouldn't have to make that choice. And I really like that because I feel like if he had been one of these other characters who turns out to not be very good with their morals and they tend not to treat the female character very well, he would have said, oh, it wouldn't matter, when he doesn't know. I like that he's like, I don't really know. I don't know what I would do because I haven't had to be in that situation. And I hope that I would make the right choice. And I feel like that's so real to have in a character. That's something very fresh where they're like, I don't really know. I don't know what I would do, because I feel like that's so real. That's something you'd talk about with your friends. Like, do you think you would do that if this were to happen? You're like, I don't know. I guess I'll have to wait and see when it happens.
Yes. I also like that it doesn't pressure her at all. You right? Where it's an opportunity to be like, oh, well, maybe if the right person was there, I would. And it's sort of, you see John Thorpe pressure her so much and effectively try to like trick her into an engagement. So it's so great to see. Yeah. When it comes up between them that he's like, so like, you know, I don't know, you know, my... And it's honest where it's like, yeah, it, you know, I definitely would consider both options and it would be a test of my character. It's just so honest and sincere, which is just the opposite of how the Thorpes operate.
Yeah, totally. That scene is so funny and also like anxiety inducing, where John Thorpe is like kind of like giving her these little riddles and he's like, do you think I should buy a ring? And she's like, I mean, if you like want to, I guess. And he's like,
do you want to buy a ring?
Do you want to buy a ring? I don't like, well, what are you saying? You're being so, so cryptic. But yeah, I would love to know what your guys's favorite scenes are. Because there's so many great moments, but like, what are some of our favorite like scenes from the movie that we really liked? Leah, I'm going to toss it first to you.
Oh my gosh. There are so many scenes. I love when she imagines herself in when they're going to bath and the people like she has, like where there's going to be these bandits attacking her. I love that scene. I feel like that's something every kid has done at least once, where they're like, what would happen right now if like somebody tried to, you know, rob us or take our car off the road, or if there was some, you know, I mean, like when you're a child, use your imagination, or even as a young adult, like once, because I feel like too, when this movie came out, like Twilight was a really big thing. And I just remember like having friends were like, oh, what would you do if like Edward was in your room? Or something like that. Like, it kind of just makes me think of that's so relatable. Like, what would you, but on a more serious scale, what would you do if this happened or this happened? What if something so exciting happened on our trip? So I love that scene. I love any scene with J.J. Feld in it as Mr. Tilney. I love anything with him. But I love when she sees him with his sister and she like, you can see on her face, she's not hiding it at all. She's like, my heart is breaking into pieces. And then he's like, oh, this is my sister. She's like, like there's this huge like gasp of relief. It's not audible, but you see in her face, she's like, sister. She's like, yes, thank you, God. Thank you so much. He's not, it's not his girlfriend. It's not his fiance. And then I also love when they're talking, it's her, Eleanor, and Mr. Tilney after the opera, and she is just not hiding at all. She's like begging him and her to forgive her, but she's like constantly just looking at Mr. Tilney, like she's saying, oh, for both of you to forgive me for not going on the ride with you. But she's looking like right at Mr. Tilney about how much I'd rather go with you. And she's like, she has no poker face at all. And he's like, all like, oh, we thought you had something important. And then Eleanor's like, oh, you know, Henry, you were going on about how like you were so sad. She doesn't say it exactly like that, but she's like, you were so sad how she would ever want to be with someone else besides you. And he kind of like makes this little face like, Eleanor, don't be telling her that. Don't be telling her I cried for hours that she rejected me to go be with that other guy. I love that scene because their faces just give so much emotion that's completely unsaid. And I like their interactions because you do get the sense that they're very close, him and his sister. And I also, the scene, I don't want to give too much away if anybody has not seen this movie, but I love when she wants to see that picture because Eleanor's all like, she kind of, my mom kind of looks like you. And he comes, they try to go look at it and General Tilney won't let them and he tells them to leave. And so then later she's like, I'm going to go see that picture. And I know, like, I never would actually snoop in somebody's house, but in my mind, I totally would be like, I want to see that picture. But I love when she climbs up there and she's looking and Mr. Tilney comes in. He's like, how could you think that, you know, my father killed my mother? And he's all, you could think, and he pauses. And every time, like, you could think, you thought of something so horrible. And every time he pauses, I'm like, yes, I totally think your father killed your mother. I was going that same track that she was going down. I just love that scene because he's like, really? Like, you thought that? And she's like trying not to, she's like, well, you know, but it's so relatable. That's exactly how I felt reading the book. I was like, he killed his wife. He killed her. He buried her in the wall or something. And then when they talk about it, I was like, okay, so he didn't bury her in the wall because they were at the funeral, but he totally poisoned her or something. And I was like, I'm totally with Catherine. And then the other scene I really, really love, besides when he comes in at the end, so romantic, is when she's digging through the trunk. And the maid, and then later the maid comes in because the notes are all down. And she's like, no, no, leave them. And she turns them. And I love that because you're like, oh my gosh, what's on the notes? What is written? And it's like a laundry list. And she's like, laundry list. Like she was hoping to see a murderous confession. Like I just love the way she does it because I feel like she really captures that. And when you watch it especially for the first time, when you watch it, you're like, what's on the papers? Even reading the book, you're like, what's on it? What's on it? The secrets are there. And she does it like, oh, I have to read it. And then it's like, oh, it's a laundry list.
Yes. I just, so, oh my gosh. The gothic elements are so funny.
So funny.
Yeah. And so pleasant to have it all woven in. Yeah. I agree. I was with her. I was like, whoa, where is Jane Austen taking me? Are we in like a murder situation? Because the dad was so scary.
He was very, very ominous. The way that they like lit him. Yeah.
Allie, what was your favorite scene?
Okay. I think I have two. The first is with, I think maybe maybe Mr. Tilney is my favorite character because I'm weak, but my other favorite character is Mrs. Allen. I love Mrs. Allen so much and I love obsession with muslin. But my favorite scene is when, just because it's so relatable, is that first party that they go to in Bath. And it's so crowded and they finally find a seat for two for tea. And it's like obvious that they like might have stolen somebody's seat and that they know no one and that everyone's judging them and looking at them. And Catherine is like, Mrs. Allen, we don't know anybody here. And Mrs. Allen smiles and like is like has a face that says everything's fine. And she's like, yes, isn't that? Oh, so bad. We don't know anyone. And she's just like, and she's just smiling and keeping face. And then she's like, nobody wants us here. And she's like, you're right. Still smiling. Like you're completely right. No one wants us here. And it's just so funny because there's been so many times where it's like things are kind of like,
it's just so relatable where like things are going to shit all around you and you just have to put on a face and be like, yes, it is. Everything is bad. Everything is bad. But we have to still, you know, smile and get through it. And so I love Mrs. Allen in that. And that scene. And then, you know, this is a little bit of a spoiler, but surprise, Catherine and Mr. Tilney get together at the end. And I just want to say that the kiss and like yes, the way that it was directed, I think was so like perfect because like
so perfect. Throughout
the movie, there are all these like, you know, kind of like imaginary, like, you like we get a glimpse into Catherine's like imagination and into Catherine's dreams where she has these like very kind of like lustful, like gothic scenes in her imagination. And then in real life, when she actually gets that romantic moment that she's been imagining this whole time, it's a little bit awkward. Like they kind of are like, oh, are we going to do this? And there's like this kind of like awkward little dance before they like go for the kiss. And it's like,
yeah,
cause that's what it is like in real life. It's not like,
it's so perfect.
You know, there's no like, yeah, there's no like billowing wind and like, you know, you're not wearing like a beautiful like blouse, like you're covered in hay because you're just playing with your siblings and now this guy's here and now it's like, are we gonna kiss? And so I just love that kind of realistic like awkwardness and hesitation, and then the kiss after that hesitation is very good.
Yes,
but yeah, those are my two favorite scenes. Mia, what about you?
My favorite scene is just when she's walking in the woods with Mr. and Miss Tilney, because I get so stressed out without fail. I get so stressed out in these Austen novels / adaptations that like things are not going to end up okay. And that like Jane Austen's just such a, I feel like she just knows me and she knows how to like get my goat and like get me really stressed out. So it's like, same. It's like when people are like rude to Anne in Persuasion, I'm like, oh my God, thank God we're at the Musgroves and everyone's being nice. And so similarly, when I'm just like, oh my God, Catherine is so naive and she's in the big city and she's being manipulated, I'm like, oh my God, finally we've lost the Thorpes. We've lost, their dad, the Tilney's father, and now we're just like in the woods hanging out.
Yeah.
And I do think because Catherine is so like emotionally young, it's just like also so nostalgic for me to like see people in the forest, like just like when Eleanor like pretends to tie her shoe so they can like walk ahead and like get to know each other more. I'm just like, oh God, that was like so many a summer romance for me. It was just like being in the woods, like trying to like figure out how to like relate in a romantic way. So I just like adore all of that so much. And yeah, I just like want a whole movie where we're just like in the woods getting to know each other.
Have you watched Mansfield Park yet? Mia?
No.
That's our next
that's gonna give you a lot of anxiety.
Oh my god. Yeah. I know. And it truly like every time I watch Sense and Sensibility, I know how it's gonna end. I get so anxious. So it's like, yes, it's Mansfield Park's probably gonna kill me.
Every time I read Pride and Prejudice, there's always a moment where I'm like, they don't get together. They miss each other and it doesn't happen. It's like, Ellie, you've read this book so many times. You know they're going to get together. But I'm always like,
it's going to happen.
Maybe they don't get together this time. Like maybe the ending has changed while I wasn't looking. but yeah, that's just a testament to Jane and her incredible writing. Okay, so we have covered Mr. Tilney, our favorite moments. How much we love Catherine Morland, how much we love Jane Austen. But before we wrap up our discussion, do we have any final thoughts about this film adaptation or about Northanger Abbey in general?
I think I really love how with this adaptation, they really, I feel like they really tried to make it like a romance novel with the elements. Like he, at the end, he comes on a white horse. They have their moment in the rain where he's helping her. They have these really cutesy like montage where you can see they've been spending time together. So I like that they put that in there. One thing I do want to know is from both of you, do you think that General Tilney either murdered his wife or his actions led to her death? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'll pop in here. And I feel like he I feel like he just kind of, probably like what Mr. Tilney said, just like wore her out from being just, I mean, a terrifying human with his pocket watch always out, like looking at the time to make sure that you're coming to dinner on time. And his big, big spacious, I mean, honestly, like it would be eating in that dining room, that huge dining room every night that's so echoey and cold would be like, man, if you were sick, you it would be hard to like motivate yourself to get better because it would be like, ugh, if I get better, what am I getting better for? More, you know, tedious dinners at this very cold, long dining room table.
Yes. Yeah, same. I don't think he like intentionally killed her, but I wanted it to be true because I wanted to get him and his firstborn son out of there, out of that house, leave it to Eleanor and Mr. Tilney and Catherine to have like a good old time. So no, I don't think he did, yeah. But I wanted it to be true. And I thought we were like truly pivoting into gothic like murder mystery. And we didn't, which is fine, but I wanted it to be true.
I want it to be true, but I think you're right. I think it's just his actions that he just abused her so much with just his manner that, and they say like, you know, when you're abused, you tend to have a weaker immune system. So I think that his actions helped lead to her death. Just that constantly, she always had to be on time. She had to do this. He pretended to be that he really loved her when all he cared about was her money. I think it was just all that disappointment and just constant control and all of that. That, like you said, when she got sick, she's kind of like, why do I want to even get better? I don't think it was even subconscious. It was just kind of like, I don't even want to. And then she ended up dying. But I still feel like he is to blame for her death, even though I don't think he outright murdered her and wanted to like bury her in the floorboards or anything like that, which is what I did think when I first read the book. I was going down that track. Or poisoned her, arsenic, cyanide.
Totally. Totally. Same. All right. Well, that all being said, it is now time to move on to our trope counting section. Normally, we count up all the familiar rom-com tropes that we spotted, but for Austin August, are there any particular Austin tropes that we spotted? I'll kick us off. We're going to Bath. It's a girl's trip. If there's a ladies, if there's a group of ladies or a heroine, you know they're going on a trip. This is just like a rom-com trope, but they did have a makeover shopping sequence, which was fun.
They did.
Which I love to see. There's a ball. If it's an Austin novel, you know there's going to be a ball. Rude city people when Catherine first shows up to Bath with Mrs. Allen. The Thorpes snub them and everyone's like rude to them. We have a you read – this is more rom-com-y. We have a you read fiction books moment where where they're bonding over a shared interest in gothic books. The dead parent trope. Eleanor's mother has passed. Sheep. We got some classic BBC wide shots. Sheep shot pastoral sheep, which honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, I wonder if they're just all from the same like shoot day.
If they just use the same B-roll as sheep, just to get
them
again.
Around to all the BBC versions. Maybe that's why I love them. I do think we had a fake candle flicker at one point, so I'm going to count that for my BBC adaptations. And then fake shoe tying. I love – this happens in Emma. This happened here where Eleanor's like, go ahead without me. Like the only way to like plausibly make it okay to be alone is for someone to be like, let me tie my shoe for a long time, which I loved. Allie, what did you see?
Okay, this is a rom-com trope, but I think this is like kind of one of the best meet cutes of like the Jane Austen, which is like – like Mr. Tilney's like pin gets caught on Mrs. Allen's like dress, and it's very much like whoops, and then it's like they have like a quirky conversation about muslin, and then they get introduced, and so I feel like this is like kind of one of my favorite meet cutes. What else? Oh, I have like guy who seems charming on paper, but is really not, which is John Thorpe. Although I don't know if they did the best job casting this John Thorpe, because I never really thought he was charming or like, you know, I never thought Catherine was going to go for him. But I think like you have like your quote unquote good on paper guy or guy who's charming. And then you have like the guy who's, you know, is actually good of heart, but I think that Mr. Tilney is both the charming man and good of heart, which just makes him like the superior love interest of all time. What else? Oh, I had that there was a white like goose. There's a white goose where like they're like she Catherine's in the carriage and a woman's holding a white goose, which is I feel like we've seen a lot of these adaptations. White goose. And then wait, I have one more. Allie, what is it? I think there's okay. Were there any hand acting shots?
I saw one early on. That I didn't write down, but I did see one.
What was it? Oh, you know what I'll say instead? I'll have there's a shot where there's either like a love interest helps heroine out of a carriage or off of a horse. Yeah. And I feel like in this we have Mr. Tilney helping Catherine off of a horse, where they then have a very beautiful cheek rub.
General Tilney, and one of I didn't mention this earlier with favorite scenes. Sorry, General Tilney, he hands Catherine to his son when they're going to go into, when they're going to Northanger Abbey. So I guess that would count. He like takes her arm and like puts it in his son's. He's like, he'll take you. You want to ride with him? She's like, yeah. And he's like,
yes.
So that would count for the hand carriage toss off kind of thing.
Yes.
Yes, totally. 100%.
And with that, we also have heroine get stuff all over her face. They love to put this in rom-com stuff where it's normally
they do.
It's a latte foam, it's whipped cream. This time, Catherine just has mud all over her face.
In 10 Things I Hate About You, it's paint.
Yeah, it's paint. There's always some excuse for the hero to be like, let me touch your face and get this off.
Yeah, and gently and like deeply look into your eyes. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Leah, is there anything else that we missed that you saw?
There's the letter that comes that has the really important information. Something big happened that kind of changes the family lives. That happens when she gets the letter from James and she finds out, you know, the truth about Isabella. And I would also say there's the curmudgeon-y older man. We see with Mr. Allen, he's kind of a little bit of a curmudgeon, like Mr. Bennett or Mr. Palmer in Sense and Sensibility. So we do see that. And then the other thing I would put in there for Jane Austen is there's a brother who's not being a very good brother. He's not being... he's not really taking care of his sister. He's not really like, you know, he calls her like a silly little fool. And we see that in Sense and Sensibility. We see that in Emma where Mr. Knightley's brother, he's kind of has that same attitude toward Mr. Woodhouse. So that pops up with a lot of her books. I feel like there's a brother who's not really taking his role of being a brother. He's kind of like being rude to one of the main characters. Ooh.
Name names, Jane Austen. I wonder which of her brothers she is dragging.
I always think that. I'm like, which one of these? Because she had like, I think 6 brothers. I'd have to double check. So I'm like always thinking that like, which brother is supposed to be the good brother? Like, you know, William Price. And which ones are supposed to be the bad brothers?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, of course, in a Jane Austen novel, there's always at least one parent who's desperate to marry off their child. There's always a parent out there who's matchmaking. Maybe I shouldn't say desperate, but there's always a matchmaking parent in one of her books or a matchmaking adult. And General Tilney is so obvious and out front about it, which I find is hilarious. He's so like Mrs. Bennet. He's a little more, you know, subtle, but he's just like, here, take my son, take her, marry him.
Like, why don't you guys ride in the cute little carriage where you'll sit snugly next to each other? You're right. He is a little matchmaker.
Well, that takes us to 18 Tropes, which for her first completed work is good, is high. Laying the groundwork for all those other ones.
Sweet. Now, I think it's time, now that we have discussed this Jane Austen adaptation, we've counted its tropes, it's now time to rate this adaptation. So this is where the claws come out, folks. Just kidding. We're all very polite. More polite than even people in Jane Austen novels. But so as of now, here are rankings for the adaptations we've watched so far. We have in number one, which I have a feeling like might be knocked down, is Joe Wright's 2005 Pride and Prejudice. Number two, we have Amy Heckerling's Clueless. Number three, we have McGrath's 1996 Emma. In four, we have Michelle's 1995 Persuasion. And now it is up to us to decide where John Jones's Northanger Abbey falls. And just so you know, Leah, the way that we do this is it's kind of like a free for all. It's like these rankings aren't set, and we and our guests kind of flip flop them every episode. Like sometimes we'll take number three and we'll put it up to the number one slot and the number one down to the number five. So I'll just say out of all of the adaptations that I've just listed, and let me know if you want me to relist them out. How would you rank them as like your 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5?
I would definitely put Northanger Abbey first. I love it. I think it captured the content that it was supposed to. It does have its moments where they definitely, the director or writer was like, we need to add like more sexy time. We have to do this because we feel like this will appeal more to audiences. But I feel like it's comedic. It has its dramatic moments. It has the romance of not only the main character, but also the romance of they go to Northanger Abbey, which is this beautiful castle. So you have like that romance of the woods where they're walking through the woods. So I would put that first. Clueless second, because Clueless, I love Clueless. Who didn't grow up watching that? And then I would probably put, is it Persuasion that you guys last reviewed, I believe?
Yes.
That it's hard with Persuasion and the last Pride and Prejudice. I would probably put Persuasion before 2005 Pride and Prejudice just because I don't like Keira Knightley. I don't think she's a good actress. I don't really like Matthew McFadden as Mr. Darcy. I felt like he had kind of like that puppy dog eyes the whole time. I also don't like how they show the Bennett's household. They really try to make them look poor. They didn't really understand like, so I feel like they don't understand the content. And I listened to your podcast on it. You said that the director hadn't even read the book. So I feel like that explains a lot of what I feel like yeah. I don't like about that movie. I'm like, oh, now that makes sense because he didn't read it. He didn't understand it. So I think I would put Northanger Abbey first just because I feel like it understands the content it's coming from. And I think, too, the actors and the actresses, it's such a good job. They understood their character's motivation. They understood their character's history, even like the small parts with Mr. Tillman's brother, where he's kind of like his whole thing is he needs to be this guy who just wants to get with a girl and then dump him. Like he does his part perfectly. I just think it's just a really great adaptation, and I think it's very romantic. So I would put that one first. I haven't seen the 1996 Persuasion in a long time, so I would rank that one third just because I don't remember. The 1996 Emma, that one's a hard one for me because I do like a lot of it, but it's so short. Like they cut out all of Frank Churchill, which is like a major component to that story. Like he's in yeah. there a second
yeah.
and so I mean that one's a hard one for me too. I feel like I haven't seen the Persuasion with Tyrion Hines in a really long time, so I feel like I'm gonna place it above Emma 1996. I really do enjoy Emma 1996, but I just feel like there's a whole chunk of it that's just gone without Frank Churchill. Like the whole motivation of with everything going on with Harriet, with him being like, you know, this total tool who's just like, I'm going to flirt with this other girl in front of my girlfriend, but it's not real, babe. So don't worry about it. Like we lose all of that. Like it's, and just kind of how she, I don't know, just that whole interaction, like the movie is good, but it's like, there's a whole big chunk of it missing. It's like someone gave you a cake and they took like a third of it out and you're like, oh, thanks, I guess. So, but I do like, the actors that play Mr. Knightley, I do love that. But yeah.
Yeah, I agree, though. I don't think Emma, I have yet to see, like, an Emma adaptation that I think is, like 100% there. Mm-hmm. I know some people really like Clueless, and I like Clueless, I think, as a movie.
Yes.
On its own, but as an adaptation, maybe not as much, but I do really like Clueless. Okay, so I have the ranking as Northanger Abbey, Clueless, Persuasion, Emma, Pride and Prejudice. Mia, how do you... What do you think of that ranking?
I mean, I'm so sorry. I 100% I love that ranking. I would 1,000% stick with that. I feel great about that. I'm so sorry, Al. Do you want to argue for anything? Do you want to see if we can make an adult compromise? Or how do you feel?
You know, I'm ready to, you know, I am like Catherine Morland. I can admit when I have maybe let my imagination run away. I can admit when I'm wrong, and I can be graceful about it. So I'll agree with you too that I'm not mad about this. Not mad about this list. I think it's pretty good. So I'll let that ranking stand for now. So we did it.
Now I think it's time for a reality check. In this segment, we test out the tropes and plot devices in the rom-coms we've just watched to see if they hold up in the real world. A plot device we see in a lot of Austen novels is that of the life-changing trip. We see it in both Pride and Prejudice, Persuasion, and with Catherine when she's invited to go to Bath. But is this something that's happened to us in real life? Have any of us ever gone on a trip that has changed our life, particularly romantically? Leah, have you?
Fortunately not. I have never been on a trip where I met someone who was super handsome and that talked to me and all those things. I did once. I was driving, through a town, and I stopped to get a drink at a place, and there was this guy. I kind of talked to him a little bit, and he was really cute, but not like, oh, we had a meet cute, and then after that, we talked again and something like that. No, unfortunately, I have never been on a life-changing trip.
Yeah, that's relatable to me, Leah. I would say I also have not been on a life-changing trip where particularly anything romantic happened. I would say my trips are mostly like Catherine's trip home from Northanger Abbey is more my vibe. Just being in a carriage with like a woman holding a chicken, like glaring me down. Like that's more what I'm used to. But I, you know, fingers crossed, never say never. A lot of Austen stuff is in fact based in reality. So, you know, there's hope for us. Allie, have you?
The only part of Catherine's trip that was similar to mine was like, I one time went on a trip where I went to a wedding where I didn't know anybody. So kind of like when she was in Bath and she's like, I know no one at this party. I went to a wedding stag and I was like, I know no one at this party. Nobody wants me here. I should leave. Which, you know, you know, was life changing in a way where like, you know, just, was life changing that it was a hardship that I had to overcome, a socially awkward hardship. But yeah, that's the closest life changing trip I've had was going to like San Luis Obispo for a wedding.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, it sounds like reality doesn't quite check out in the romantic department, but like all of the trials and tribulations they face, we've all faced while traveling. But fingers crossed, we'll get our Austen era romance, stare at a sculpture of our loved one and think, wait a minute, I am in love.
Although, now that I think about it, I did go on a trip. I didn't have the romance, but when I was a preteen, we went on this cruise ship. And it was to Catalina. It was one of those really short ones. And my sister, we hung out in this teen area and all the guys wanted to date my sister. So she got the romantic trip. But none of them lived near us. Like they all lived on the other side of the country. So they all lived like on the East Coast. But they all were like wanting to date her and wanted her phone number, which we didn't have cell phones. So she couldn't give out. But I don't think she wanted to give out her home phone. So she got that. So there is hope that maybe
one day for us. Well, I hate to say it, but that's the end of the pod. Leah, thank you so much for joining us today. Do you have any social media things to promote or important romance advice for our listeners?
Well, I try to be on everything. So I'm on Twitter. I'm also on Instagram, and I do have some TikTok videos. And then I'm also, I have my blog on WordPress and I'm also on Facebook. So you can look me up there. Jane Austen Runs My Life. I also, my sister, she does Madsen Creations and we collaborated on two shirts. So one of them says Jane Austen Runs My Life and you can order that. And then the other one, we watched the Selena show and she wears a crop top Jane Austen shirt. We looked for it. We couldn't find it anywhere online. So we kind of designed our own that's similar. So you can also buy that off our website. And then we've been talking because there's no, there's not a lot of like Halloween Jane Austen products out there. So we're kind of trying to plan something to be out in September for order. So that's exciting. Hopefully we get everything that we have planned. We want to call it, this is our working name, is Catherine Moreland's Closet. And we kind of have some gothic
Halloween,
but still Jane Austen type things. So we'll be dropping that in September. And you can go to her site, which is Madsen Creations.
That's so cool.
But that's it. Otherwise, I really want to thank you guys for inviting me to be on. I had so much fun being a part of this. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming. We're so thrilled to have you on. We love your blog. And thank you so much for joining us for Austen August. And thank you all for listening to the pod. We have a new episode out every week. And remember to subscribe and rate. And we are brought to you by Campfire Media.
And P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
P.S. I love rom-coms. I love rom-coms.
Ever wanted to hear the story of the time that Melissa Fumero from Brooklyn Nine-Nine's kid had a two-hour-long tantrum that drove generations of their family to weep? Or maybe the story of SNL's Bobby Moynihan's kid who found random pizza in a playground sandbox and ate it? If so, you should check out Why Mommy Drinks, a weekly comedy podcast where I, Betsy Stover, talk to interesting people like Richard Jefferson from the NBA or Rachel Bloom from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend about a time that their kids broke them down into a shell of their former selves or maybe even drove them to drink, but in a fun way. If you have kids, this show will make you feel less alone. And if you don't have kids, you're going to be so glad you don't have kids. Listen on Campfire Media, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
Why Mommy Drinks.
Campfire.